Begin the current daf Masechta Shkalim, daf Chaf Aleph. It begins 6 lines down from the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf. That is, in the Mishnah previous daf, we had a machlokes regarding if a Kohen Gadol passed away, and he brings a Chavitin, he brings half in the morning, half in the night. When he passes away, the Shaila is who has to continue bringing his Michas Chavitin. So if there's a new Kohen Gadol, he starts bringing. But if not, there's a machlokes. The first opinion of Mishnah said that it comes Mishal Tzibah, the Tzibah pays for it. The second opinion was that of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said that the Yershim, they buy it. However, Rabbi Yehuda said that Shleimo Hitzikreva, he said that, however, they didn't do like their father, that he would bring half in the morning, half at night from the Yisaron. Rather, they would bring Shleima. And that's where our Gemara continues in explaining that opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. What does it mean that it was brought Shleima, that it was brought whole and not in halves like the father, like the Kohen Gadol? So Rabbi Yosi Amar Rabbi Yechon and Bayu Mahu, he asked, how do we understand this halacha of Rabbi Yehuda? Was it Shleima b'Shacharis or Shleima bin Arbaim? Did it mean that they would bring now double of what their father used to bring? The Kohen Gadol is not around anymore, so someone has to bring it. So he would bring half and half. They would now bring a complete Yisroel in the morning and a complete Yisroel at night. Or maybe no, they're not bringing more than the Yisroel that he used to bring for his Chavitin. It's just that they can't bring it in halves like he did. So they'll bring it in the whole in the morning and then nothing in the afternoon. Or is it a whole in the morning and whole at night? So now the Gemara says, now, if would be obvious, it's almost like an imtim tzalayim. So if you would resolve it by saying that this question is not a question, because it says in the pasuk, and the Gers is not minchas, but rather the word mincha, it says mincha tamid. It says in the pasuk that it should be a mincha constantly, which means to say that you would learn that means to say that it has to be a shleim in the morning and shleim in the evening. If that's the way you would learn from the pasuk, that you see it has to be constantly, which means that you can't have a gap not doing an afternoon. It has to be exactly how it was with the Kohen Gadol, but you can't do halves. So you have to do whole and whole in the evening. But there's another question. Shleishis lugin mahin. So we resolve the question regarding the actual flour offering itself, that the mincha will be a complete isaron in the morning and a complete isaron at night. What's with the three lugin of oil that the Kohen Gadol would bring together with the isaron? Now, the way he did it was, just like he split up the flour, the mincha, in the morning, so too he would take a lug and a half in the morning and the lug and a half in the afternoon. But now that he died, and we said that the flour from the yarshin have to be doubled because they can't do half and half, so they have to do a whole Yisroel in the morning, a whole in the evening. So, as we said regarding just before, so that the question becomes, now, shleishis lugin, shachris or shleishis lugin the bein arbaim, do we say that now the same thing would apply to the oil, that would also be doubled, and you'd have to bring three lugin of the oil in the morning and three lugin of the oil in the afternoon? Or maybe regarding the oil, we'd say that no, you bring a lug and a half in the morning and a lug and a half in the afternoon, because regarding flour, which we brought from the pasuk that says mincha tamid, so there we have a gilu, we have a revelation from the pasuk which tells us this halacha. However, regarding the oil, no one ever said that it has to be double, and therefore there we would continue to bring the lug and a half in the morning and lug and a half in the afternoon. So that's one question. Amr b'chizkir, he says, there's another question that you have to ask regarding this minchas chavitin that's being continued to be brought by the yershin of the Kohen Gadol. Shnei koimtzin mahin. What's the halacha regarding the two kemitzes of levaina that the Kohen Gadol would bring? And that is, do you say shnei koimtzin b'shachar, so shnei koimtzin bin abayim, that now just like we say that the flour gets doubled, so to the levaina that's brought along with this also has to be doubled? Maybe you say that no, where was revealed in the pasuk that has to be doubled, as we said regarding the flour, that has to be doubled. But regarding the, first of all, the question was regarding the shem and the three lugin, maybe that doesn't have to be doubled. It's one half in the morning, one half in the evening. And same thing regarding the levain, there's the same question. Do we say that it gets doubled? Did you bring two in the morning and two in the evening? Or do you say that no, that you're only going to have one in the morning and one in the afternoon, as the Kohen Gadol himself would bring when he was alive? So Amr B'yesus, Rabbi Yosef says, he comes to resolve the second question. And he says, regarding the question of the Levina, do you do one in the morning, one in the afternoon, or do you do two in the morning or two in the afternoon? It says, Klum Lamdu Lekaimitz. Now, where is the source for the halacha of the Levina that it actually needs a Kaimitz? How do we know that you have a fistful of frankincense that's brought with the Minchas? Where's the source of all the Menachas that it's a Kaimitz? Leim Minchas Chayte? isn't it learned from the mincha of a sinner, as we had learned in the previous parak, that that is the source where it says that has to be malay kumtza, and that's what we learned to all other menachas. Now, if so, malahal and shnei kumtzin, just like over there, it requires two kumtzas, and that is for every isarin of flour that you bring, that's what it's telling you when there's isarin, you bring a kumtz of levaina. And that is because that's the shear of how much oil you bring for every isarin. And so too, for everything that comes along, it's the isarin that's kaveya that establishes how much comes along with that. That how much oil comes along, how much levaina. So afkan, shnei kumtzin. So therefore, the same thing would apply over here, that you would need a kumtz of levaina for every isarin. So here also, regarding when you're doubling the silas, you're doubling the flour, because we said that mincha tamid means you have to bring a full one. You can't bring in half, so you have full in the morning, full in the afternoon, so you're doubling. So then you're going to be doubling the kaimitz too, and therefore you'll have two kaimitzes of levain in the morning and two in the afternoon. However, and some have this girsa, others don't. Matam and Srichli, the Gemara says that, however, you could say that just like over there, this was a question that we asked regarding the Chavita Kain Gadol, if you're going to double the Kemitza, Sahav Hochat Tzrichle, it's not really true, because here also, essentially, we do have the same question, when you bring many menachas in one vessel, if you need to do a Kemitz for every single one, or would you talk and do one Kemitz, it's not so clear over there regarding the Halalacha. You're right. When it's one Isarin, then you bring one Kemitz of Levina. But no one ever said that every Isarin requires another Kemitz of Levina for it, and therefore, if you had many Isarinis in one Kli, we don't know for sure that there you would have another kmitza for each one. And therefore, in our case, we having double, it's not necessarily the case that you would bring double the amount of kmitzas for that amount of Yisroinus. And maybe the halacha would be that you would only have one in the morning and one in the afternoon. Now, Amr B'chizki, he comes regarding the first question, regarding the Shleishas Lugin of Shemen. He says, Klum lamdu Shleishas Lugin. Now, where do we know this halacha, that you have to bring three Lugin of oil for the Chavitin? Don't we know this from the tamid that's brought every single day in the afternoon? As it says by the Chavitin, it says minchas tamid. That's the terminology that it uses over there. And therefore we're saying that it's like the mincha of the tamid that's brought every single day. Now if so, malahal and shleishas lugin, just like over there by the tamid, that it was three lugin of oil for one isarin. So afkan shleishas lugin, here also you would say that it would be three lugin for every isarin. And therefore, similar to the logic that the Gemara used before regarding the Levina, since over here we're doubling, so then we would double the Shleishas Lugin, you'd have three in the morning, three in the afternoon. So the Gemara gives the same type of daicha that it gave regarding the Levina. Umatam and Tzrichalei, no, just like over there by the Chavitin, we have a question. Afkan Tzrichalei, here also we have a question. In other words, this is the same question essentially that we do have by the Karban Tamid. And well, how would that be? In other words, if let's say someone didn't bring his mincha in the morning, that he's supposed to bring, there's two karmat tamids every day, there's one in the morning, one afternoon. If he didn't bring it, and then he brings it in the evening, which it says that minchasab in the skeim balayla, you could bring it, or even tomorrow if it needed to be. And then the question would be, would you bring three lugin for every single one, a sarin? Or would it be enough with the two lugin that you're supposed with? Would it be enough for both of them to have with the same one? And therefore, essentially, what the Gemara is saying is it's not clear. Both by Levina and both the case of Shleish Lugin, we're trying to learn that from the sources where they're from. The Gemara assumes at first that it would be because it is one Isarin over there, and it requires this amount. So the Gemara assumes that when it was double, it would be double that amount for each one. And that the Gemara says it's not clear because could be the case would be in both those sources regarding the Tamashal Ben Abayim and regarding the case of Levina, both sources of the Halach and the Menchas Chayte, you would say that maybe there also, if it was double, it would be enough with the original amount, and therefore it's not clear if one would require three lug in the morning, three in the evening, or just one and a half. And the same thing regarding the two kmitzas of the Levina. Now the Gemara continues discussing the Mishnah from the previous daf that said one of the seven takanas of Bezin was shlo yeh v'chulu, that it shouldn't be a halach of me'ila regarding the afer, regarding the ashes of the paradum. The paradum is burnt and they use the ashes in the tahara process of those who have tumas mes. Those ashes, there was the takana of Bezin that it should not have a halach of me'ila. So now the Gemara explains, Reb Shimon bar Nachman b'shem Reb Yonason says bedin haya sheyimalubah. What it seems like is that mitzad the halacha, the ashes of the paraduma should have had me'ila. The hinkas are shleim luba, what it sounds like that the Mishnah is telling us, but they made a gezerah, a decree that there should not be halachas of me'ila that apply to it. And that the Gemara asks, but Tanu learned the Braisam, it says in reference to the paraduma ashes, it's called chatas. Now, malamit shemayilimba, that teaches that there is me'ila, because me'ila means misappropriating things of hekdesh. Since it's called chatas, which is items that have a halachas me'ila apply to it, so if that's the term that it's used, so therefore you see that there is me'ila regarding the paraduma. Now, however, the Braisa tells us that ba'moyalin, it says that it is called a chatas, ve'ein moyalin ba'afar. However, its ashes is not called a chatas, and therefore there is no me'ila regarding the ashes. So the question the Gemara is asking is, if our Mishnah is telling us that it's a Tanai Bezdin, that there's no Me'ila, but the Braisa is telling us that it's Midaraisa, that there's no Me'ila in its ashes. So why do we need a Takanas Bezdin if Minatari there was never Halacha Me'ila applying to its ashes? It's only to the animal itself. So Amr Bavo Ravo explains. He says, Birishayna Hayu Mishtakshakinba. Originally, when since there's no biblical Halacha Me'ila, there's no Me'ila regarding the ashes of Paraduma, so people were. They were mezalzel with it. They used it in a degrading manner because there is nothing wrong with it. You can use it for your own purposes. They would put it on their wounds. So therefore, since it was degrading for the item, although it didn't have a me'ila, but there was certain sanctity to it. So they decreed that there should be me'ila, and therefore no one's going to use it for their own purposes because it's a isra of me'ila. Kivin shenigdru. So once then things turned out okay, and that people stopped using it because there was halach me'ila. So gazru shleim lo. Then they went back and they made a gzera that there should not be me'ila. But in other words, it makes sense why there had to be a tanai bezin, because although midaraisa there is none, but then they made a gzera me'ila, and then the tanai bezin undid that gzera to go ahead and say that there shouldn't be me'ila because now they weren't using it anymore in an inappropriate manner. So in our Mishnah we said valakinen regarding those that. It says that if there's going to be a from the bird offerings, that those the people that have to bring, if there's some if one of them becomes pasul, for example, a woman that gave birth, or you led this, or a zav or a zav, they have to bring these kinei chayva, one bird a chatas, one bird an oila. So if one of them became pasul, so there's a machlokes in the Mishnah, whose obligation is it to rectify it? Who's going to pay for the problem that happened with this kinei chayva? One opinion says that it's the tzibur that does. Another opinion says that it's hamasapik, the one that provides, he's the provider to the hekdesh, to the base of migdish, for the birds. If something happens, it's his responsibility to pay up. So related to this, the Gemara brings in a Gemara that we had on a previous daf, that it was speaking about a discussion regarding the 13 shayfarish, the 13 boxes that were in the base of migdish, and that between, if you found money exactly in between the box of the kinin, which is the obligatory birds that have to be brought by Yeled, the Zav, Zava, and the Gezela Alis, which are the young pigeons, which are for someone that just wants to donate Karbanis Eilis to the Beis HaMikdash. So he said you put it in Gezela Eila, because that's the halacha that the Gemara give different interpretations of why that is, but it goes to the Gezela Eila. That the Gemara says, fine. Mitzar HaSafik, you put it into that box. But Ha'isha HaZais B'mahi Miskaperis. With what is this woman going to have a kapara? In other words, if you're saying it's going to the Gezela Eila and she needs her karmachatas, if it possibly fell out from that box of the Kenan, that means her, yes, one of them is going to be brought as an Eila, but the problem is both are going to be brought as Eila because it's going to the Gezela Eila box. Now, one of hers was Eila, but the other one has to be chatas. Where is she going to have her atonement of her chatas if we're going to be using these monies for the Gezela Eila for Eila? On Zadam Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak has said, and the Gemara is bringing this in because it's related to the discussion of our Mishnah, because there was two opinions, and one opinion said that it's Hamasapik, the one who provides, has to make up for it. The Tanai Beznu, it's a Tanai Bezin, that Hamasapik is a Kinin, who Masapik is a Psulois Vesav Oivdois. The one who provides the birds to the base of Migdash, if one of them becomes invalid or gets lost, he has to make it up and bring a separate kina that has the chadis and the eila, and therefore there's no problem because although these monies are going to the gezel eila, this woman will have her atonement if it fell from the back to the kina because the provider will go ahead and make it up by bringing and being maknit to her these monies, and therefore there's not going to be that problem. Hanulach perek moish nimtzu, we shall return to you the seventh perek m'sech l'shkolim, perek moish nimtzu. Now we begin the eighth perek m'sech l'shkolim, perek kol harekin. And this continues the theme of the previous Mishnayos, continuing to talk about this concept of hanimtza, things of items that are found. And we start talking about halachas of tumah tahara, but talking about, again, things that are found. So the Mishnah says, kol ha'roikin hanimtza in Yerushalayim, all types of spittle, you see spit on the floor, that are found in Yerushalayim, tahirin, we consider them with a chazak of tahara, and we don't make a gzer that maybe it's from individuals that are tummy, which the spit of someone that's like a zav can be metami, even people and vessels, because we go after the rive, and most people are not a zav and a zava, And therefore we say that the spit that you find will have a chazaka, will have a halacha of tahara. Chutz mishal shuk elyon. There is one exception besides the upper marketplace, which the Gemara will explain what, why is that? Why is that marketplace different than the rest of Yerushalayim? However, the rest of Yerushalayim is tar divrei meir. Rabbi Yisrael, he argues. He says, "Bishar kol yemayis hashana." Regarding the rest of the year, in other words, not during a yom tiv, shebe emtza tamei. If you find it in the middle of the road, it's tamei. Shebe tzad in tayr. And if you find it on the side of the road, it's tahar. However, during a yom tov, it's the opposite. Should be emtza tahar. If you find it in the middle of the road, it's tahar. Should be tzad and tamei. If you find it on the side, it's tamei. And the reason is, as the Gemara will explain the specifics of this halacha, it's always the minority of the people that they have the obligation, they go to the sides. And therefore, since the yom tov, the people are different in tahara regarding the rest of the year, that's why there's a difference in the middle of the road or the side of the road from yom tov and the rest of the year. So now we move on from spit to kelim. Kala kelim hanimtzam Yerushalayim, regarding all vessels that are found in Yerushalayim. Now, there were two different roads that were related to the mikveh where they would immerse the kelim. There was a specific road that when they would carry the kelim on their way down, which is called Derech Harida, on the way down to immerse the kelim into the mikveh. And then there was another road that was a separate path coming up from the mikveh. Now, therefore, regarding these vessels that are found in Yerushalayim, Derech Yerid LeBeis HaTefillah, if it was found on the path, which is a one-way street going down toward the mikveh, if that's where you find the vessels of Tamei, they're Tamei, because obviously it fell on the way down to the mikveh, which means to say it was Tamei on its way, but not yet, becoming Tar. Derech Aliyah Tarim, if it was found on the way up from the on that road, which means to say it's only when you're coming out of the mikveh that you're on that road, so obviously it was already Tar, so then it will have Halach of Tahara. As the Mishnah explains, because Shaloiki Ridasan Aliyasan, because the way down is not the same as the way up, because on the way down it's definitely Tamim, whereas on the way up it's definitely Tahar. Divrei Meir, that's a bin Divrei Meir. B'Yesi Amr, he argues, he says, Kulam Tahirin. He says, all the vessels in Yerushalayim are Tahar, because Chazal did not make a gzera on a doubt of Kalim in Yerushalayim, they considered them all Tahar. Chutz, there are a few exceptions, Min Hasal, a basket, V'hamagrefa and a shovel, V'hamaritza and the hammer, Hamyuchadim likvaris. These types of items that are designated for the cemeteries, for graves, for example, the magrefa, the shovel that was used to gather all the bones of the corpses and so too, in this basket and this hammer, since they were designated for graves, for the Beis HaKfaris, that's why they do have a cheskas of tumah, which is because related to dead bodies. However, the rest of Kelim and Yerushalayim, when they're found, then we consider them all tahar. Now, the Gemara continues with halacha of finding Kelim, but specifically regarding the time right before Pesach. And that is as follows. Sakin shenimtzis biyudav. Someone finds a knife on the 14th of Nisan. Then the halacha is sheichet ba miyad. He can slaughter his carbon Pesach, which everyone's busy on Erev Pesach, slaughtering their carbon Pesach, because there's so many people and so many karbanos. So everyone needs to have a knife to go ahead and slaughter the carbon Pesach. If someone finds a knife on the 14th of Nisan, he can slaughter his carbon Pesach with it immediately, and he doesn't have to, the one who found it, doesn't have to go ahead and immerse it in the mikveh. And the reason is, because we say mustama, we take for granted that the owner, even had it been tamei, this knife, had already immersed it on the 13th of Nisan, so that it should already have had sundown, Harav Shemesh, on the night of the 14th, so that on the morning of the 14th, it should already be tahar, because you have to use it in the afternoon of the 14th to shecht it. You can't use a knife that's tamei. So if you find it on the 14th, we say that even had it been tamei, it most definitely was already immersed in the mikvah on the day before, so that it had sundown, so that it could be used on the 14th. B'shloish asar. However, if the knife was found on the 13th of Nisan, Then you have to go ahead and immerse it again. In other words, that even if there's a doubt that maybe the owner had already immersed it in the mikveh, but still in this case, out of doubt, maybe he didn't immerse it in the mikveh yet, because he still had time on the 13th up until evening time. He could still immerse it and still have Harav Shemesh, have sundown, because it has to have already been immersed before the sun sets, but it's not yet. If you find it in the afternoon of the 13th, he still could have immersed it, because he says, I still have time, it's not sundown. So since maybe he didn't immerse it yet, because he still would have had time, so therefore, mitzana safik, you have to go ahead and immerse it. So that's relating a knife. However, regarding a kaifetz is a large type of a knife, which it's generally not used for slaughtering. Rather, they were used as it was one of these choppers, which was used to break up pieces of meat and chopping the bones. So regarding that kaifetz, then bezeu bezeu, whether it was found on the 13th or the 14th, in other words, even if it was found on the 14th of Nisan, which we said regarding a knife, that you could use it right away, because for sure it was already immersed. However, regarding this kaifetz, shaynu matzvah, you still have to immerse it again. And the reason is because since what these, basically these knives were for, they were big sledgehammer type of knives, which were used only for breaking bones. Now, you can't break bones on Pesach. That's one of the issurim regarding the carbon Pesach. Therefore, the owners didn't need it even on the 14th of Nisan. The only time they would need it would be on the 15th of Nisan when they're eating other pieces of meat, they're eating their different carbon chagiga. So then, therefore, you would say that maybe they didn't immerse it yet, because even though I need it on the following day, on the 15th of Nisan, the first day of Pesach, but I don't need it on the 14th, so I still have time up until the evening of the 14th before Ben Hashmasha. So if you find it in the afternoon of the 14th, maybe he didn't immerse it yet, because he doesn't need it for today, because he's not using it for the Shecht and the Karban Pesach, which you can't break bones anyway, and therefore, you have to immerse it. However, Chalav brought us at least B'Shabbos, if last day, the 14th of Nisan was on Shabbos, which means Erev Pesach is on Shabbos, then Sheikhid Ba, then you could slaughter with this kaifetz, miyad, you could use it right away, and continue on Talmud Beis, and that is because we don't say that maybe he didn't immerse it, and you don't have to immerse it, because even though, as we said before, that the owner doesn't need this knife to shecht it, and he can't use a kaifetz today anyway on the 14th of Nisan, because you can't break the bones. However, the problem is that since he's going to need this on Yom Tov, which is after Shabbos, so that's why we say that he most definitely immersed it in the mikveh from before Shabbos. Because since on Shabbos you can't immerse, as the Gemara says in Masechtas Beya, it looks like you're fixing something. So therefore, as the Gemara says over there, that if Yom Tov falls on after Shabbos, you have to immerse it before Shabbos. So although we said generally on the 14th, we say that maybe he didn't immerse it yet, because he still has to the evening, but it's Shabbos. On Shabbos, you can't immerse it. And you're going to need it on the 15th on Yom Tov. So that's why we said that even by the case of the Kaifetz, we say he most definitely immersed it even before the 14th, because he would have to do it from before Shabbos. Now, B'tez Vav, if somebody finds the knife, the Kaifetz, on the 15th, then Sheikhid Ba, then if you found it on Yom Tov itself, then you could slaughter with it a Shlamim Miyad right away. Because again, there for sure the owner had already immersed it from before, because either one, whether it's the Sakan or the Kaifetz, you're going to need to use it on Yom Tov, and therefore we say that if you find it on Yom Tov, it most definitely was immersed from before Yom Tov. Now the Mishnah concludes, Nimtza Kashur L'Sakan, that however, although we said there's discrepancies regarding the Kaifetz, which is this cleaver, this type of a huge knife that's used just basically a lot of times to chop bones, so if you find it, Nimtza Kashur L'Sakan, if you find it attached to the knife, then harehi kesakan, then even the kaifetz will have the same status as the knife itself. And therefore, even if you find it on the 14th, that's on a weekday, you can still slaughter with it right away, because since we see it attached with the knife, and the knife we know for sure that it was already immersed on the 13th, as we said regarding the knife, so therefore, now that it's attached to it, it was tied to it, so then we say it was probably immersed with it, and therefore you could go ahead and use the kaifetz even on the 14th, and you don't have to immerse it. Now, regarding the beginning of our Mishnah that we said regarding the spittle, the roik that's found in Yerushalayim, that's tar, we said that there's an exception. There's the Shukha Elyon, the upper marketplace. So what's the reason for that? So the Gemara gives different interpretations why the Shukha Elyon had, although the rest of Yerushalayim that we said the spit was tar, according to the first opinion of Mishnah, we say Shukha Elyon was tameh. So Rav Avin B'Shem B'Shum and Levi, he says, Katzrin Shal Nachem Hayisham. There were non-Jewish launderers that were there in the upper marketplace, who they were tameh. And since these launderers were there, we consider them like zavim, or these nachrim. And therefore, all the spit was from them, and therefore we say the roik over there, the spit was tameh. Another pshat the Gemara brings, Rabbi Chanina, he says, Aroidais hayunachrim, and the Girsa changes from Birushalayim to Sham, that there were wild donkeys over there, and there is a reference to the marketplaces to the Shukha Elyon, the upper marketplace in Yerushalayim. And that's why we say that the rake over there was tummy, because there were these non-Jews that were hunting and piercing these wild donkeys. And that's why, again, we said that that was an exception to the rest of Yerushalayim. Now, the Gears of the Gra adds on that Amri B'Shub Malevi, that Maisa Hayunoichrin Aroidis B'Sutrat Yerushal Melech, that there was this incident that in the army of the king, they were piercing these wild donkeys. Now, the Gemara now, because it had introduced this concept of a roidus, these wild donkeys. And that's because that's one of the pshatim of why the Shukah Elyon was tame, because you had all these non-Jews coming piercing these wild donkeys up in that upper marketplace. And the Nachrim have halacha like Zavim, and therefore there the Reich is considered tame. So because of this, it introduces this story that there once happened with these wild donkeys that the army was piercing them. So there were all these dead wild donkeys all over the place. And the Gemara continues, now, so all the people that were coming up doing Aliyah L'Regel three times a year, coming up to Yerushalayim, they were up to their knees in blood because there was so much blood. They came in front of the Chachamim. And they didn't say anything to them. In other words, the question of the other Gemara was, are we tame? Because you have all these nevelis, these carcasses which were pierced by these army, and now there's the blood. The blood is part of an animal. Now, just like a nevela transmits tumma, they were asking, what do we do? We're full of this blood. Are we tummy? But the Chum didn't say anything to them, which meant to say that they're tar. Now, that brings us into the following story, which continues, and the Gemara continues throughout that halacha, which we had spoken about in the previous daf, which talks about, is there tumma of nevela in the dam of nevela? Or do we say the dam does not have the tumma of nevela? And there's a machlekes regarding that halacha. So the Gemara brings the following incident. Reb Simon b'Shem b'Shuman Levi, he says, Maisa b'pirda mishal beis Rebbe shemesa. There was a time that the mule of the household of Rebbe that had died. V'tiris d'mea mishum nevela, and they said that its blood is tahar. In other words, it does not have the tumma of nevela. Now Reb Elazar shol Reb Simon. Reb Elazar asked Reb Simon regarding this tahara of the blood, at kama. How much did we say blood that there could be that it will not transmit the tumma of nevela? And essentially, as we had explained in the previous daf, the question was, do we say that there is no tumma of dam whatsoever regarding the halacha of nevela? Or do we say that no, that dam is just like the nevela itself, just like the flesh, so to the blood. However, it has to have the shear of a nevela. Now, the shear of a nevela for it to transmit tumma is the shear of a kebaya. And for the blood, which is a liquid, to have and transmit the tumma of the basar, it has to be that if it would congeal, it would be the size of a kebaya, of a kazayas, which is a share of a revius. So he was asking, until how much did they say that blood is tar? Was it even more than revius because there is no tumma for the dam of nevela? Or is it that no, because it was less than a revius, that's why it didn't have the requisite shear. But if it was more, it would transmit tumma. So he asked him this question. Bulei Agva, he didn't answer him. So Shalu Reb Shuman Levi, so he went to ask Reb Shuman Levi. Amalei, he said to him, ad revius tar. Says, up until Revius was where they said it was tar. Yaisen became tummy. And that's Rabbi Shuban Levi's opinion is, that there is tumma, as we said, it's just that it was less than Revius, but more than Revius, then it would congeal, it would be the shear that's necessary for the meat itself, then there would be mitame. So the Gemara tells us, Vash Rabbi Laza, and it was degrading, it was embarrassing for Rabbi Laza, that Rabbi Simon didn't answer him this question that he asked me. He asked him a simple question regarding the story, regarding Halacha, and didn't answer him. It bothered him that. So the Gemara says a follow-up on this story, that Rabibi have a Yosef, Rabibi was sitting, and Masni Hodeinub, that he was saying over this story that happened regarding when this mule had died, and they said that the blood is tar. So I'm Rabbi Yitzchak Barbisnes. Rabbi Yitzchak Barbisnes said to him, Ad Kama, until how much? Ad Revius Tahar, was it that only up until Revius they said it was tar? And Yosef became Tame, but more than that, it was Tame? So Uvodve, that, and Rabibi kicked him. I don't know, it doesn't necessarily mean that he kicked him. It means to say that he disregarded him. So Amalei Reb Zirikas, Reb Zirikas said to him, begin to have a shalach, because he asked you a question at boy base, you kick him? What does that mean? So Amalei, he says, begin to have his daitibi. I didn't mean to kick him. It's because I didn't have my thoughts with me. And I'll explain to you why I didn't mean this, because the Amr Reb Chan said, it says a pasuk in Devarim when it's talking about the klalas. The curse says, your life will be hanging opposite you. What that means is, it means to say, somebody has to buy wheat for a year. He doesn't have his own crop. He has to purchase wheat for a year. So it's something that's, it's a certain precarious type of situation. Even worse than that, it says, that you'll be afraid night and day. That's something that purchases from the merchant who doesn't even have for a year. Rather, it's every day and night that he has to go be purchasing from the merchant. And even worse than that is, you won't even believe in your own life. What that means is, someone has to buy from the baker, which every time he has to eat a meal, he has to go buy bread and he has to go get, and he doesn't know if there's even going to be. That's the worst of all of them. He says, and I rely on the baker, I have nothing, and I eat from meal to meal, and that's why I wasn't all there, and that's why I kicked him, but I didn't mean to, not because he asked me a question that I held it was wrong, it's just because I'm in that type of situation. So ultimately, the Gemara asks, my kudun. So what is the halacha? Is it that there's no tumah for the dam of nevela, or is it only up until Revius, because then it doesn't have the shear, but more than Revius, it would transmit tumah of nevela. So Hadri Bishua ben Pesaira says, al dam nevela shutar. He said this testimony that the blood of nevelas are tar. So you see clearly that there is no tumah for it whatsoever. So the Gemara says, no. Mahu tar, what did he mean when he said that it's tar? Tar milahakshar, it means it's pure from making food items vulnerable and susceptible to tumah, and that its food items can only accept tumah once they come in contact with seven liquids. Now, although we say that one of them is dam, the dam of a nevela will not be able to be machshir, will not be able to prepare food items to be susceptible to tumah. But halitam is mitam, but it's not true regarding the actual dam of nevela. If it is mitame, it would be mitame. He's only saying that's tahar from being machshir food items to be susceptible to tumah. But that the Gemara asks, how can you say the way you're resolving it right now, interpreting what Rabbi Shua ben Pesaira's testimony was, that the dam and the vela, it is tame, but it's not machshir other things, but tamun tanin, and we learned over there in the Mishnah Masechta Machshirin, that says dam hasheretz, the Gersa takes out mitame, kibsari, the blood of a sheretz, of the vermin of creepy, crawly things, that their blood is like their flesh. Now, what does that mean? Mitame ve'ene machshir, that they transmit tumah, but just like the flesh is not machshir, it has to be a liquid, so through their blood does not make food items susceptible to tumah. And ve'ene on the kayetz, where you have nothing that has this phenomenon like sheretz, to say that the blood is like the flesh, that it transmits tumah, but it's not machshir. But we just said now that the Adam Nevela is the same thing. It's mitame, but it's not machshir. So how can we say Sheretz is the only one that's unique if we just said the same regarding the Nevela? So now the Gemara answers, no. V'ein lo nekayitza b'kishir tumase. We have nothing like the Sheretz that the blood will have the same as the sheer tumah of the flesh itself, which is the size of a nadasha, of a lentil. Avodamay mitame kipsar. We do have this same phenomena of the blood being like the flesh itself, that it could be metame, but not being machshir, like we said regarding nevela. What we said is unique about sheretz is that we don't have any other type of blood that will have the same shear as the flesh, that to be such a small shear, which is even the size of an adasha, because by nevela, we say it has to be a shear of revius. But by sheretz, that's where it's unique, but not that it can't not be this unique category of being metame, but not being machshir. However, the Gemara concludes, Amar B'yesi. Pligaba train Amar Ruan. It happens to be, it's Machlaikis Amar Ruan regarding this halacha. Chad Amar Tame, v'chad Amar Tame. One says the Dama of a Nevela is Metame, and one says that it's Tar. And the Gemara explains that Manda Metame, the one that says that it's Tame, as we said, when it's more than Revius, because less than Revius, according to everybody, it's Tar, because it doesn't have the Shir. That's Rabbi Yehuda, as we said, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, as the Gemara will explain. Umanda Matar, and the one that says that tar, that means there is no tumah whatsoever, the dam nevela, is Kribishu ben Besar, as we said before, that he says that there is no tumah whatsoever, as we quote his opinion. So Amalei Rava of Duma Demin Chusa, he says Vyos. And it's correct what you're saying, that according to Yehuda, that this, that it's tahar, is only up to Revis, but more than Revis, it would be tame. Because Yehuda, Marina Debe Nesihava, the Paisik of Rabbi Huda Hanasi's household was Rabbi Huda. And that incident happened, the mule that died in the household of Rebbe, and it was Rebbe Huda that paskin, that's tar, and he said that's tar only up to Revius, but more than Revius, it was tame, and therefore that is the conclusion. It's a machlekes amiruah regarding the halacha of dam nevela. Now our Mishnah said that kol ha'roikin v'chulu, we said that all the roik, all the spit in Yerushalayim is tar, except for the shukah elyon. So that the Gemara asks, and this was already discussed before, loy chein amre bevo b'shem Rebbe Yisi ben Chanina, didn't Rebbe Vo say that Le'gazer al Reikin Shebi Yerushalayim, that we did not decree any tumah on the Shukah in Yerushalayim? So therefore, how can we say that in the Shukah Elyon that's going to be tameh, and that is obviously didn't hear the Sugya of Rebbe Oven that we quote on the top of the Amid, and therefore he was asking, so how could we even say that there's tumah in Shukah Elyon? We said that in entire Yerushalayim, we didn't make any gzeir of tumah. So that the Gemara answers, like we said before, it Allah, Reb Avim B'Shem Yishum Alevi, Katzin Shal Nachem Hayisham. This is one of the pshatim the Gemara brought before, that there were non-Jewish launderers over there that hung out over there, and therefore their spit is like a spit of a Zav, which does transmit Tumah. And therefore they will say that it will be Tumah, but you're right, it's the rest of Yerushalayim where we said that there is no Tumah if you find the spit. Now the Gemara quotes a Braisa because it wants to explain the reasoning of the opinion of Rabbi Yesi, who's quoted in our Mishnah, where he makes a differentiation regarding if it's found in the middle of the road or the side of the road, and a difference if it's on Yom Tov or the rest of the year. So the Braisa says, "Bishaya Maisa Shana," when it's the rest of the year, Hatemein Mahalchen Shibelis, the Tamei individuals, they would walk in the middle of the road. Vatahayin Mahalchen Natzad, and the pure people, they would be walking on the side of the road. And the reason why they walked on the side was because they wanted to make distance between them and those who were Tamei. Now the Gersa changes, and it does it throughout this sugya, from Vahatarin to Vahatameim. Now Vahatameim Mahalchen Stam. Now those who were Tamei, they went plain. In other words, they weren't careful to separate themselves from those who were Tahar. They would walk regular. Vahatahirin changes from Vahatameim to Vahatahirin Armelam Prusha, but those who were Tahar, they would tell the Tameim, stay away, stay away. They were trying to walk on the side of the road. They wanted to be careful to stay away from those who were Tamei, not to become Tamei. And again, that explains the halacha of Rabbi Yosi. That's why the spit that was found on the side of the road during the rest of the year, there it's tahar, because the taharin were those who walked on the side of the road. And if you found it in the middle of the road, it was tamei, because that's where the tamei would walk. However, b'shas haregel, during the Yom Tov time, now during Yom Tov, we consider all the Jewish people as chaveir, as tamid chacham, as those who are scrupulous in the halachas of tumet tahar. As the pasuk in Shaftim says, and they're all tahar. And the reason is because there is an obligation that every single Jewish person to make himself tahar for the Yom Tov. Now, whoever was tamei that could not, for some reason, become tahar, he has to separate himself, and he goes on the side of the road to stay away from other people, that he should not be metame them. Because everybody else, the majority of the Jewish people, are tahar. And that's what the Braisa says. So therefore, during Yom Tov, hataharin mahalchen shabaz, those who were tahar, since they're the majority, they would go in the middle of the road. Those that were Tamei, they would go from the side. And the Gersa changes to Hatahirin Mahalchan Stam. Therefore, the Tamei, they would be able to go regular because you could assume everyone's Tahar. And the Gersa changes Vatameim Oimelam Prushim. And now, since they were the minority, the Tameim had the obligation to say, be careful, I'm Tamei, stay away. And that's the general rule basically is that the minority were the ones that always walked on the side, and they were the ones that had to warn others to say, "Don't, I'm not from the majority, stay away." And therefore, during the rest of the year is where the Tahar would be on the outside, and during Yom Tov is when the Tamein would be walking on the outside. And that explains Rabbi Yisi's opinion in our Mishnah. Now, our Mishnah then continued from the Reich, from the Spittle, to the Kalim that are found in Yerushalayim. So our Mishnah said, "B'chol Kalim Hanem Tzayim," regarding all vessels that are found, we said that there's a difference between going down to the mikvah, which was a separate path, and coming up. So if it was on the way down, it was tamei. So the Gemara asks, but the leichin on Rebbe Avoh b'shem Rebbe Yochanan, didn't he already say the leigazra lekeim shu b'shalim? Similar, like the Gemara asked before regarding the reich. So to regarding vessels, didn't we say that there is no tumah of vessels that are found in Yerushalayim? So how could our Mishnah say by when it was derech harina on the path going down to the mikvah, it was tamei if it's in Yerushalayim, and in all Yerushalayim we don't assume any tumah on any vessel? So now the Gemara says that this is different, because Mekivin Shenimtsu Derech Harid L'Bezot Tevil, since it was found on the path going down towards the mikveh for the immersion, Sinasu Ha'ichiach, it's a proof in its own right that since it was fell down on the way down, obviously that it was Tamei. So you're right, although we don't assume for things to be Tamei, but if it was found on this road, obviously it's a one-way road and it was on its way to the mikveh, which means obviously that it was Tamei, and that's why that would be an exception. Now, regarding a later part of our Mishnah, in the opinion of Rabbi Yesi, regarding that he said that all kalim are tahar, no matter where it's found, and the only exceptions he said were the magrefa and the different meritza, those which are used specifically for the graves, for the kvarim, he said those are the exceptions, those are the things that will be tamei, because obviously these are things that are used with dead bodies, with corpses. So related to this, Abishal, who he would bury dead people, as the Gemara says in the third parak of Masechtas Nida, and therefore he was very acquainted with these utensils. Hayikayre Eisen Tzipayrin. He would call the shovel, the magrefa that we mentioned in the Mishnah, we said that if they're used for the basic forest, that then those vessels, if they're found, will be considered tame. He would call it a fingernail. Now, my dama tziparin, why was it called a fingernail? Because it was similar to a fingernail in the sense of how the shape of the shovel was. It was in the shape of a fingernail of a person, and that's why he would call it tziparin. Now, my dama meritza, what was this hammer that we said that if it was designated for kvarim, that then if you find it, it's considered tame? What was this used for that was considered tame? Shemeritza sa'evan labesa kvaris, that is when they were digging and they would find a rock in the way and they would smash it with this hammer. That's what this meritza was, and that's why it was, since if it was designated for the basic kvaris, that's why it would be an exception. Although Rabbi considers all kalim found to be tar, here they would be considered tamer. And then our Mishnah concluded by saying kaifetz, that although we said that there's a discrepancy in halacha regarding the kaifetz and the sakin, however, if the kaifetz, this type of a huge knife that was used just basically to chop once, it was attached to the knife, then we said it has the same halacha as a knife, and if you found that on the 14th, just like the knife, you will be able to use it right away without tahara. However, Tani, we learned in the Braisa that argues on the Mishnah and holds that if hasakin kshurullah, if you find the kaifetz attached, this cleaver attached to the knife, harezu kamaisa, to the contrary, then we say the knife is like the kaifetz, and then they both have to be immersed in the mikvah. So although our Mishnah says to the contrary, that if you find it with the knife, then it's the kaifetz like the knife, and you don't have to, the Braisa says that if you find the knife attached to the kaifetz, then the knife is like the kaifetz, and then just like the kaifetz has to be immersed on the 14th, so too the knife has to be immersed if you find it on the 14th. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, Halacha Beis, continuing on the theme of the halachas of Tumah that we spoke about in the previous Mishnah. So Pareches Shenitmis Bevlat HaTumah. Regarding the Pareches, there were curtains that were in the Beis HaMikdash. So regarding a curtain that became tame from a Vlad HaTumma. Now Vlad HaTumma is a Rishon LaTumma. It literally means a derivative of Tumma, which means to say there's Avi HaVais, which is a corpse. That's the most extreme Tumma. But generally the most extreme is a Av HaTumma, which is one step under that. When that goes ahead and transmits Tumma to something else, that becomes a Rishon LaTumma. Now generally a Rishon LaTumma cannot be metame a Keli or an Adam. However, if the Pareches touches Mashkin Tameim, which means to say impure beverages. Now, the Rabbanim made a gzera on beverages that they will be metame kalim. Now, what's the reason for that? In Torah, it's not. So it was a gzera because of liquids that emanate from a zav or a zav, for example, their spit or the semen of a zav, which they are considered an avatum. Those liquids are like the zav or the zava themselves. And therefore, that would be metame adam and kalim. It would be metame vessel min hatayra. So therefore, because we're concerned that we might mix up the different liquids, we said all liquids will at least min rabbanan transmit tumah to a keli, and therefore that's how we could have such a case of the pareches becoming tame from a vlada tumah, which is that of this liquid. Now the pareches, it was considered a kli, because the reason is when they would carry it from place to place, they would wrap vessels inside of the pareches, and therefore it had a status of a kli, because it was a container for the different vessels when they would transport from place to place. So again, so you have the pareches, that's a kli. Now, though generally cannot have tuma from a vlada tuma from a rishon, however, the chacham made two gzeres. They actually made all liquids considered like a rishon latuma, and that's because of related to this gzera of the zav and zava of their liquid, their spit and their shech bazer, which does transmit tuma. And therefore, we said that the keli will become tame from that rishon latuma. So now, regarding the pareches that's tame in such a state, matbilin isa bifnim. What is that? We're allowed to immerse the pareches inside the area of the Beis HaMikdash, and that is we don't have to send it out of the machnas shchina. And the reason is, since it only became tame from a vlada tuma, from a derivative of a tuma, so therefore it's not so extreme in the sense of that, as we're going to find regarding an avatuma when it becomes tame, that you have to send it out. In this case, you don't have to. And therefore, similarly, umachnis nesmiyad, you actually ought to bring it right back in. And that is, it doesn't require harav shemesh, which generally tuma requires a tevila, an immersion, and harav shemesh, sundown. But by divrei seifrim, as the Mishnah says in the first parak of Masechtas Tyrus, that regarding divrei seifrim, those tumas, that yes, it requires a tevila, that's midrabanan. However, it does not require harav shemesh, and therefore, again, you could do the tevila inside, and also, moreover, you could actually bring it right back into its place. It's already considered tahar. However, regarding if the pareches became tame from an avatama, which is, let's say, it touched a sheretz or touched on a vela, so then the immersion has to be outside. That's what's called shiluach. It has to be sent out of the area of the azar, as the Gemara says at the end of Masechtas Eirvin. And then it's hung up in the chel, which is the area outside of the azar of the courtyard, because it needs sundown. So therefore, you can't bring it right back in. A, it has to be sent out, and B, it requires sundown. Now, in Ha'isach Hadasha, the Mishnah says, parenthetically, that if it was a new pareches, so Shaitchen Ha'isa Al-Gaga Itztabadeh, so then they would, when they would spread it out, it would be drying outside, you couldn't bring it back in, so they would spread it out on top of the benches, on the roof of the Itzva, which were the benches, which was in the area of the Beis HaMikdash, Kadei She'iroha Ames Malachta, so that the people should see how beautiful the work was of the pareches, Shehina, because it's beautiful. As the Mishnah elaborates and discusses the actual structure of the pareches, Shimon Leil Omer says, "Mishum Shimon ben Askan." Says pareches of your tefach. The pareches had a thickness of a tefach. Al shivim v'shtayim nimim nereges. It was woven on 72, which literally the words mean 72 threads. But it's related to the heddel shafts, which were those that made. That's how the weaving process was. So it was on 72 of these heddel shafts. Now, al kol nima v'nima, on every thread was made out of chav dal tchutim, was made out of 24 strands, as the Gemara will explain. Arka mem aleph, if its length was 40 amas, v'rach v'chav, and its width was 20 amas, like the opening of the ulam of the antechamber, which was a height of 40 amas and a width of 20 amas. Now, umishmeinim v'shtayim ribui. Now, 820,000 dinarim haisenasis. It was that expensive. That it was 820,000 dinarim that it was made out of. V'shtayim oisim achol shana, they would make two every single year. V'shalosh meis kehanim atbilin oisah, and it took 300 kehanim to immerse the pareches in the mikvah. Now, although generally when vessels that are made, that even though it's made in the state of tahara, it doesn't, so therefore it doesn't have to have a tefila, but when things are made for kodesh, which in this case was made for the Beis HaMikdash, then as the Gemara says in Masechet Chagiga, it needs a tefila, and therefore since this was so large and so heavy, therefore it required 300 kohanim to immerse it in the mikvah. So now the Gemara discusses the source for this, that we said that it was 24 strands, that was every single string, that every single thread that was used to make this pareches. Because ilu amar chut, had it said in the pasuk when it was describing the making of the pareches, the term thread, so then I would say echad, I would say that's one because that's singular. If I would have used the term kafel, double, so I would say lishnan, that means that each thread should be two strands. Shazur, if I would say twisted, I would say lishlash, that means it should be made out of three strands. But since it says mashzar, which sounds like double of shazur, that's lishish, that means every one is six strands. Now, arba, there were four different types of strands that was used for every string. Because there was tchelis, which was blue wool, vargaman is purple wool, telashani is scarlet wool, sometimes have a red, b'sheish and linen. So that's four that has to be used for every single one. So mekan ho esmer arba. So you have six of every one, and now there has to be four different types. So you have six times four, that makes 24. So you have 24 strands for every single thread that was used in the making of the pareches. Tzni, we learned the Brayis had a different opinion. There were shleishim mishtayim, not 24, but 32 strands for every string. And that is because ilo amrachut, this opinion says a little different. Had it said string, I would have said echad is one. Kafel, lishnayim, that means two. Shazer, not three, but this opinion says that's double of kafel, which is, if it would have been that it says that it should be shazer, twisted, I would have said la'arba, that's four. Mazar, which is double that. Lishmayim, that's eight. So arba has to be four different types, times eight. Mikan, not loss of a train, so therefore there's 32. Tana will learn a different braisa, an even bigger number. Arba mishmaina, 48 of strands were in every thread. Because ilu amar chut echad, had it said string, I would have said one. Kafel double, lishna, I would have said it's two. Kliya, it introduced a new term, braided, lishlisha, then I would have said three. Shazer, then twisted, lishisha, that's six. Mazar, which is double that, is Lishnei Masa, is 12. So Arba, there's four of each type, times 12. Mikan, Arba, Mitmanya, from there you see that you have to have 48 different strands in every single string and every single thread that was used to make the pareches. Now, once we brought in this drasha of the pareches, so now the Gemara introduces the following discussion regarding that we find regarding the different curtains that we use in the Beis HaMikdash, that one is called Maisa Cheshiv and one is called Maisa Reikim. The Gemara wants to understand the differences in the composition of these different curtains about why it has different terms defining that. So the Gemara says, Kasev Echad Omer. One pasuk says regarding the Mesach HaPesach, which was the curtain that was there by the opening of the Azara, it says, Maisa Reikim, that it was a work of Iman the broiderer. Because of Echad Iman, another pasuk says, this time regarding the Pareches, it says, Maisa Cheshev, that it was the work of a designer. Now, what's the difference between Maisa Cheshev and Maisa Reikim? So the Gemara says that Maisa Reikim means parts of Echad, there was one figure on the curtain. Maisa Cheshev, the work of a designer, is Shnei Partsufas, there was two different figures. Now, we have Machlekes in the Gemara, how to explain that difference between Maisa Cheshev and Maisa Reikim, that if there was one or two figures. Rabbi Yehuda Reb Nechemya, Chadama once says, Maisa Reikim, this that it was Maisa Reikim, which means that there was one figure, means a Rimekan, that there was a line on one side, and the Girsa changes from the word Varit to V'chalik Mekan, and it was empty on the other side, which means there was one figure on one side and not on the other side. Maisa Chayshiv, that was Arimekan, and it changes the Girsa to V'arimekan, and the line on the other side, and that is because we have the two partsufis, like we said, one on either side. That's the difference between the Maisa Reikim and the Maisa Cheshev. The Charanam, the other opinion, says, Maisa Reikim, when it says that it was a Maisa Reikim on one side, it means to say one figure was a Rimikan that changed the Girsa to Varimikan. It had a line on either side. In other words, that the embroidery was to have the same figure. That means there was one figure on both sides. And that's the term of Reikim, that it was Nirkam, the Tzuran, and the two sides. That's how embroidery works. Now, Maisa Cheshev, the work of a designer, that was a Rimikan ben Neshmikan. When it says that there was two partsuvim, it means two different partsuvim on either side. Now, although generally when you do something one side, it shows up on the other side. That's what they were able to do, to have one figure, a lion on one side, and an eagle on the other side. That's what it means with Maisa Cheshev. Either one means that there was only one on one side and nothing on the other side, versus two is to have on both sides the same figure, or one means to say that one means one on both sides, the same one, and two means two different ones on either side. Now the Mishnah concluded by saying that b'shmeinim v'shtayim ribu ha'itzanasis, it was made out of 820,000 dinar, and then it concluded by saying that it took 300 kehanim to immerse this pareches in the mikvah. So the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yitzchak bar Bizna b'shem Shmuel, he says, although it's said that it required 300 kehanim to do the immersion, it says, but guzma, it's an exaggeration. And a lot of times throughout Chazal, when it says the term 300, it's an exaggeration. It doesn't literally mean 300. It means that there was a lot of kehanim. So then the Gemara brings similarly a Mishnah Masech, this Tamid, that says the same idea. It used the term 300, and it uses the same expression that it was a guzma, it was an exaggeration. Taman Tanim, we learned that within Mishnah Masech, this Tamid. Pa'omim ha'yaleha, sometimes there was on the Mizbeach, so much ashes from all the karbanos that were brought, kishloish meis kor, like there were 300 kor just of ashes on top of the mizbeach. On that, Rabbi Yisi b'Rabbon b'Shem Shmuel says, similarly guzma. It was an exaggeration. There wasn't exactly 300. There was a lot. But again, that's the term that's usually used in the Chazal to explain a large amount.